Can I just say, I feel like it gets better every song.
Oh, thanks, man.
The record. And maybe that's just because I just listened
first
to
it. First one was terrible.
First song, so, I mean, so at this point, the first number eight. One.
So if you listen to the record backwards, it just gets worse and
it's just,
worse.
It's downhill. It's a downhill.
No, I mean, it's just, I don't think it's that. It's no, not I that haven't. This one's better than the last one. It's just that as a whole, it just gets better and better and better as you go.
I think
as the narrative progresses, they all get richer. Because yeah. I feel like it's going to be that way and has been for me. I mean, I've had the record like 2 weeks or something.
Yeah.
And every listen, it's like, man, it's kind of like Arrested Development. You watch Arrested Development and there's all this stuff that you didn't realize ever. Was how brilliant it was yeah. from the very first episode.
Yeah. Made a
That's
huge
how this
mistake.
Record is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and when you really, when you look at it in a, I don't think when I listened to it the first couple of times, I was not thinking chronologically in
right.
any sort of
you're just so, listening to
yeah
listen.
Yeah and you know having this podcast to know the story behind all of these things, it's much deeper and interesting and
yeah very well thought out.
Who played trumpet?
Aaron Strumpel played trumpet on that one.
The great Aaron Strumpel.
Aaron Strumpet.
Sorry. I just Strumpet, it's so trumpet. Rare that I know the answer to a question.
You got it, Luke. No, actually Aaron, we were done with mix one and I've been wondering if this song needed horns, and so had Dave. He was thinking, maybe we should add some French horns. And I was listening to it after mix one. We were in the studio to do mix two. And I was like, man, I'm going to call Aaron up. And Aaron and Dave and I, our studios are all a mile apart. And so I called Aaron and I was like, man, would you be willing to throw some trumpets on like today or tomorrow? Because then we have to revisit for mix two. And he was totally up for it. And what's hilarious is I flew the track over to him. And then he called me right before, like, he's like, hey, I just set up. And he's like, I got the ribbon set up. And I was thinking, like, you should probably just roll over here because you're going to have huge opinions about what I play. Aaron and I are in a side project called Heck Yeah, the Halls together. And his trumpet work on it is some of my favorite. Yeah. But producing Aaron's trumpets is one of my deepest joys. Like, I just laugh. I have the best time in the studio. He's such a talented player. I mean, he comes up with great parts on his own. I don't want to say he doesn't, but...
But then when you're trying to describe what you want, you're like, no, more of a... less of a... and more of a...
No, him, like the string players that I use, Keith and Cameron, I love them because I can sing a part and they can play it right back at me pretty much immediately. And so as a producer, that's really fun for me to be able to play with ear players like that. And it was a really fun moment. I'm really glad, too, that Aaron found a way on the record because he's been such a big part of my community and a good friend for many years, but especially in the last year. So it's been special to have him actually have a musical presence on the record.
I think when I listen to the record now, I'm going to imagine you laying in bed and him sitting on the floor with his trumpet just doing his thing.
It's okay, Tifa.
Let's actually start out talking a little bit more about production on this one. Yeah. So there's like this synthy plucked string thing happening. What is that? What
you know,
am I hearing?
That's actually, that was Dave. It's actually plucked strings with a synth pad doing the same part underneath. There's like a woo-woo-woo-woo-woo-woo-woo that's happening along with like the pluckies.
But those were played live?
No, those are keyboard.
It's all synth.
It's
okay.
Synth. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, it's in synth parts, but those are actual real string samples. Dave did those and the layers on it are just simple, but they feel really effective.
It's so simple and it affects the texture of the song in a really great way, but it's so subtle.
Oh yeah, it's not loud.
Yeah, because they're so subtle. And this maybe is even a question about the trumpet. Like, what is it that you felt like those were adding? Is it just musical aesthetic or is it like it adds to the emotional content of the song for you in some way?
Yeah, I think the reason why I was reserved on adding trumpet right away is I wanted to make sure it was absolutely necessary. But I imagined like a solo kind of sad, but like strong kind of trumpet sound, the, you know, just kind of coming in verse two. And then I felt like, you know, the end of the song just lyrically is a lift in the sense where I feel like I'm starting to acknowledge that moving forward is good. Moving forward to where I am. Like there's been progression. So even though it's still sad content, there's some freedom in the expression. I listen to a ton of like old soul and Stax music and stuff. So I tend to love those simple, rhythmically interesting trumpet like sections or horn sections. And so Aaron's up for anything and he's got tons of cool tools. So it just felt like it, that needed like the movement and the pacing, but also there's something about the trumpets that make it more celebratory, which is a nice addition to something that's still discussing something that has a lot of weight, but it is like headed, there's movement.
But as the song builds and stuff, I really feel like this is a moment that I'm sad, but I'm accepting this reality now.
You know? And there's some liberation.
Yeah.
You know.
So this is interesting. And I don't know where you were in your story when the song happened.
Right.
But it's been interesting for me that you and I, none of us have discussed this song or really the record before sitting down to record.
Yeah.
But Aaron, you and I are having the exact same experience listening to this. In that what I wrote on this paper was this song feels like you're accepting what's happened and finally saying it out loud.
Oh, wow.
And I feel like that's kind of what you're saying.
Yeah.
I feel like you kind of even hinted at that. That like, this is both and. This is sad and it's moving forward.
Yeah.
You know? Well, and with the last line, it's like this, it's like that is like an...
The end, I won't be the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The sun came up and I won't be the same.
It the feels only like, other note I wrote was last line because I want to discuss that last line.
Yeah.
You guys.
Live high five.
So what is the last line? I couldn't quite make out what you were saying.
The sun came up and I won't be the same.
And
the first line of the song is, the sun came up just like any other day and I crawled into the bed you made. It's a reference to a couple things. It's a reference to I'm literally crawling back into bed because I don't want to get out of bed that season.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also kind of the nod back to like the sun came up just like any other day and then I just like stepped in the reality of what's been happening. I just found out.
A situation that was created for you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so it's kind of a reference to the beginning, you know, and then as a song, like in verse two, wait, actually one of my favorite lines of the whole record is in verse one. For truth has a way to find, no lie can bind her feet. So for truth has a way to find, no lie can bind her feet. I like, even as a human being, who cares about like justice and there's truth on a justice scale. And then there's like personal truth and, you know, all these things. But I like the idea that the truth will set you free. And I also like the idea that the truth will find a way, like that you can't subvert or hide it forever.
Yeah.
That actually brings me peace. That's helpful for me when I even think about my future personally. And when I think about the world, you know, I think MLK says that the arc of history bends towards justice.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can macro and micro that idea, but in some ways it's that the truth will be revealed. We will not be able to hide it. And then that will like give us freedom. And yeah, I just love that line. I'm really, I'm not proud of all the lines I write. I'm a pretty plain spoken writer, but I'm
really
proud
of
that one.
I like that you're saying like the truth will set you free, but also there's no way that you can bind truth down. You can't hide it.
She's going to, she's going to find her way out.
I've imagined when we've talked about the show, I think you've imagined also the show being a resource and a comfort to people who are maybe in the same situation that you've been through.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm really curious what you would say today to someone who is in the situation that Reed was in? A person who...
If they're listening to the show.
If they happen to be listening to the show, which I think is a real possibility, because there's people whose marriages are struggling that may receive this from a friend, and maybe the reason their marriage is struggling is because they have that truth kind of buried somewhere. And so I'm curious what you would say to them.
I think it's probably really rare for two people to be married and one of those people actually like just doesn't love that other person at all. That they like despise them and intentionally want to hurt them. I would say that's probably insanely rare, right? So I'm coming from the reality that if you're married and you're in a relationship, at some point you've had deep love between you that's probably still there, even if it's been, you know, convoluted with pain and fights and arguments or whatever. But the reason you're probably hiding what you're doing is because there is a part of you that doesn't want to hurt the other person because you know it will inflict pain. I think there's probably also part of you that like wants to protect yourself, but it's not either or. And so for somebody that might be on the edge of maybe making like a decision that would blow up their relationship and isn't there yet, or maybe you already have, I just think I would always rather know the truth. And I think that if even if it's something you're considering, it's brave to be honest about it. Because I've thought a lot, and it's hard to say with hindsight how you'd really react, but I would have preferred him come to me years ago and say, I no longer want to be in this in this way, or I'm thinking about considering doing these other things, or this thing happened to me in my past, and you know, it's making me realize that I have like a different understanding of what intimacy is and what love is, and you know, whatever it is, right? I would have preferred the consideration to have participated as opposed to have been subject to his choices.
Participated meaning participate in the decision.
About how to move forward and what he needed. And
so you make the bed together.
Kind of. And I know that, you know, there are people who prescribe to the idea that you only have a couple outs to marriage. If like, and I'm referring to like the evangelical world that I grew up in. And I'm still a Christian and I still believe in God and all those things. But I think there are some parameters we put around the concept of marriage and what's acceptable and unacceptable when it comes to divorce that I think honestly has hurt a lot of people in the end, or maybe like taken them to the edge of the cliff in a way that was unnecessary. And I still believe that it's awesome to fight, to stay in relationship, to stay in your promise and your commitment. I don't think it's easy. I think it's really challenging. And I would have gone all the way, you know what I mean? But there are just some things that change everything. And even our definitions of what, and Reed did not abuse me. I just want to say that very clearly. But I think like our definitions of abuse are wrong. I think that they're very singular and unfortunate. And I think it ends up hurting the victims of abuse profoundly and trapping them. And so I think that we need to start having a more nuanced dialogue about what is committed, healthy relationship and covenant and marriage in a way that people don't feel like they're doomed to stay in something that, in my opinion, could lead to an abusive relationship. Yeah. So I don't think people wake up in the morning and think, I really want to hurt somebody, or I want to like really like start leaning towards a dysfunctional relationship. I don't think anybody really wants that. I just, so I, the best thing I could say is, you know, if you feel like you have something that you are hiding or holding on to, like find some safe people to talk to. It's not something to shout at the rooftops, but you absolutely should be including like your partner or your spouse or who you're committed to in that process. Because for me, it hasn't been the acting out. It's been the lying. It's been the hiding that has like actually really hurt, I think, the most. People lie because they think they're protecting. I don't think most people lie sinisterly. There are people who do, but I don't think that's most people's motives.
Yeah. I think that... If you'll bear with me for a minute.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I think that you're brilliant and strong and wonderful, and you don't need anyone to sort of stand in your defense. So that's not how I mean this comment.
Yeah.
I mean this as an editorial note, because I also have evangelicalism in my past.
Yeah.
And I've seen enough times the response from evangelical community, who I'm still associated with and love dearly.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know there are people who are going to hear what you just said and scrutinize your words and want to proof text you. And I would just encourage those people, if that's your instinct, if your instinct in this moment is to scrutinize Latifah's words or Latifah's words on this record or Latifah's experience, then I would encourage you to actually scrutinize your own heart in this. And because you're not seeing a human being who's had a really painful experience, you're not showing any empathy at all. And so I would encourage you to let that be all of us. Let that be our instinct and our reflex in a moment like this, in a story like this, is not to scrutinize. It's fine if you disagree and you interpret things differently. That's fine and that's welcome and it's valid.
Yeah.
But
that's for you. That's for you, not for anybody else.
Yeah.
If you interpret it differently, that's for you.
One thing that we talked about a lot is like within the Christian community, especially because marriage is held at such a high esteem, we partly just don't talk about it, or we don't talk about like the legitimate reasons that divorce happens. I mean, Latifah's whole thing about being nervous about losing followers, right? She and I talked about that. I hate that. You know, I hate that that's even a thought in her brain. And I think it's legitimate, but I just hate that that's the reality, that a Christian would pass judgment on her or not want to listen to her because of this life experience that was really beyond her control.
She had some real concerns and fears about how will other people feel about that? And will they say that that's wrong? Or like, I should be the good Christian woman who just kind of swallows this and moves on and we're going to be okay. And it actually says pretty horrific things about the Christian community that a woman in that much trauma and stress and pain, that her concern is about being re-traumatized and harmed again by the Christian community, because they would say to her, you did the wrong thing, you should have been better. And I'm not saying they would have said that, but the fact that Tifa had fears about it reveals something about the community itself, which is really, really troubling and unfortunate.
I am just amazed. I'm amazed that she didn't try to hang on to a marriage that had been broken for years and years. I see a lot of women hang on to marriages where they're in it for years after the marriage was over because they're trying to hang on. They're trying to put pieces back together that don't fit anymore. And Latifah, in such courage, you know, had to deal with that and ask herself, you know, where do I want to be in 5 years? Where do I want to be in 3 years? What can I live with? What can I not live with? And I sometimes think as Christian women, we don't ask those questions. We don't think, what do I want? You know, what can I live with? What can I not live with? We tend to think, oh, I need to live with everything. You know, all this stuff that happens to me, I've got to bear it and live with it all. And I don't agree with that. And so the fact that she has made choices and has happiness, I mean, you know, she's not gleefully happy every day, but she, I know, has joy and has hope and not every day, but I know she does have hope. I know she does have plans for her life, and it's admirable and really neat to see. I'm really thankful that I get to see it. This love's gone bad.
My relationship with God, with the divine, with the Trinity, Richard Ward talks about the divine flow, which I really love, has actually sincerely and richly deepened in this last year. I've had a few people say to me like, oh, I can't believe you're like not angrier at God because like, look at all these things that you've lost. And I'm like, God didn't do any of that. You know,
God draws near to those who are absolutely suffering, not
yep.
pulls away.
Yep. And that divine flow of like love and healing. And what I refer to as like the fruit of the spirit, which is gentleness, peace, patience, generosity, kindness, love, self-control, you know, all those things. That is what's always available to us. And I don't think that God's promise has ever been wrapped in the expectation of my future success or what is actually entitlement. God's promise is wrapped in God is with us.
Yeah.
And that is something I have felt more deeply in this last year than I have felt in my whole life. And I am so grateful for that because I grew up in that context. And I grew up with ideas about marriage and divorce that I don't hold today anymore. And there are things I still hold to, you know, but
I keep the promises you make.
I do. Yeah. And I just think that we have to make room for our actual experience to not define who God is or what faith is, but to give us some freedom and grace to explore moving and shaping, I think, some of those ideas that we grew up with. Because the ideas I grew up with aren't necessarily like verbatim necessarily who God is. It's man's interpretation of who we think God is. And I know some people freak out when they hear me say that too, but I am not afraid of like not being loved by God or being misunderstood by God. I just don't think anything I do is going to surprise God
yeah.
at all. And I find that insanely comforting. I think we can surprise each other with how horrible we can be as human beings and also like how lovely we can be. But like none of that's surprising to God. And so like, I just want to be careful. I know there's going to be people who have been fans of mine and listened to my music for many years who will be disappointed by this new reality about my life. Mm-hmm. And I think that's because the artists we love and the people we admire inside, we just want them to agree with us because then we feel like we're on the same team and I admire them and they're cool. So I'm cool. And like, yeah. they're great. And so
it's
I'm great.
It's this like linking of arms.
Yeah. And it feels secure.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like we somehow have cemented our future soul in a safe place or something.
I can continue to believe the things I say I believe because the people I admire still believe those
yeah,
things.
Yeah. Yeah. And I still absolutely like have the same basic faith structure. Absolutely. I still subscribe to all those things. But
when I hear you talk, and I know, like, I know you,
yeah.
and I know that we're all on the same page in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Like, even on the same page, CXVI. No, but like, even when you're saying all of these things, I know that there's so much more to even the things that you're saying that is so hard to, like, you're even using language to contextualize this thing that there's no language for,
yeah.
and trying to figure out a way to explain where you are to a people who have a different language than even you have now. And yeah. it's hard to like, I know I used to listen to interviews with
right.
Chris Martin of Coldplay and
right.
they'd say, what are your views on God? And I'd be like, oh, cross my fingers, please.
Please be on my team.
Please be on my team. Yeah. And if he would say something, I'd be like, oh no, but it's all, yeah. there's so much language to this
yeah.
that like, it's hard to navigate. And then like coming through a time that you've come through and like, there is a new language. And also, you know the old language, but it doesn't fit into the new. And even the new language doesn't fit into what you really are feeling about it all.
Well,
does this make any sense?
Yeah, no, 100%.
And it's like, I'm also, I want to be somebody who has like a posture of peace towards anybody in front of me. You know?
Yeah.
I have that for Reed, and I have that for you, and mm-hmm. I have that, you know, there's some people that are more challenging, like Trump, but it's fine. But anyways, I think that, ultimately, I do know and believe that human beings, we are reactive. No matter how much we try not to be, that is what we are. We are walking around this world and we are reacting to what happens to us. And so I know when people are reacting in a way that feels unloving or ugly or challenging or hard, they're reacting to something that's happened. And so I want to have peace and grace and mercy for those people that I know are acting out of hurt and pain. I also don't want to placate horrible behavior, right? Mm-hmm. So like, that's where it gets a little tricky is like, where do we start drawing boundaries and lines to prevent people from, you know, being horrible? But at the same time, how do we make room and space for people to make mistakes? Mm-hmm. And
or just for people to be people.
People to be people. Absolutely. Yeah. And so it's like I'm using this language also because it's not like I hate evangelicals. I'm not saying that at all. I want to make room. Mm-hmm. And I know there's going to be people that just like write it off and they don't want to be part of the conversation, and that's fine. But I'm really interested in the people who are sitting somewhere and they're wondering and they're questioning and they're in between, or they're experiencing something hard and the world they're sitting in, they know they'll be rejected for it. And that's who I'm interested in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like that's who I'm interested in.
People who are open to nuance, who are not strictly living in the black and white, that there's gray in between there.
And my life has been rudely stripped of the black and white.
Right.
I mean, honestly, my whole existence, even as a person, is stripped of black and white, but it just keeps going down that path more and more and more. Like I've thought, man, so I'm already a woman. I'm already like half Middle Eastern and I have brown skin and I work in an environment mostly where those things aren't really considered as pros. And now I'm going to be divorced. I am divorced. But so I just keep getting more marginalized, mm-hmm. like unintentionally. But
in the world where you are like making your living?
Yeah.
Just think of it as like more like refining your niche.
Yeah, exactly. Like. Refining my niche. Well, and I'm affirming of all people. And yeah, so it's just one of those things where kind of honestly, one of the things that has been really hard is that there's this instinct in us to protect our reputations or like to somehow safeguard how people see us. And it's like one of the things I wrestled with this morning when I woke up and knew we were going to tape a few more shows. It's like, there's going to be people listening to this that are just going to like freak out and blow me off. And on some level, I don't really care, you know, but on some levels I clearly do because I woke up thinking about it. Right. And
well, you would be kind of crazy if you didn't.
Well,
think about it.
I know, but I think part of it is that like my nature, my deepest desire is to be understood. I don't really care if you like me. I
and
just
a
want
podcast
you,
is not the place where you're not, gonna, yeah.
I know. But, so that's like one of the things I have to fight against in order, because I still think that this is worth doing. Mm-hmm. And I want to do it because I want to be helpful. And all I can do is use my story and my context to understand the universe and therefore try to like then have it be helpful for other people. I can't be somebody else and have a different story. Mm-hmm. So reputation is something that we strive, I think, for because we think it will... I mean, it's not always a bad thing to strive for if you want to be somebody that's known for being honest and making good choices and polite or whatever it is. Some for creatives, it's like they just want to like be known for making great art or whatever it is. I really want to be known for being kind. And I said this to you earlier, like there's all different kinds of people that are born talented, born attractive, born, you know, intelligent, born powerful, born strong. I think those things, like we don't really choose all those things. We can develop some of those things. We don't choose them all. But to be kind, that's a feat. I can't control the fact at this point anymore that I'm divorced. That happened. I made that choice. I can't control that I have the skin color I have, or that I'm the gender that I am, or that the sexual identity I have is the sexual identity I have. Like all those things. But I can wake up every day and like try. And there's days where I fail. And I'm sure there's people who have experienced me not in that way. And then people who have. But I think if we all woke up and like tried for that, we'd be doing better. And so even in like the art of having this conversation, I want to be kind and considerate of the people who will blow me off. And I want to be kind and considerate of the people who want to dialogue more, because I'm not trying to pick a fight. I'm just trying to express what's happened, some for me. But at this point, you know, I'm a year out. I've done a lot of the me stuff in therapy and with my community. I'm doing this as an artist. And because I believe that sharing our stories is like one of the best things we can do with each other.
Yeah. And I think if you are somebody who is not fostering connection, if you're not like being a part of connection and you're constantly looking for other people to mess up so that you can write them off or whatever, like you've got a problem.
Or tell them what team they're on.
Right. Yeah. If you're separating into teams and if you're like, if you're not somebody who is about connection, then you're wrong. And if there's somebody who doesn't have the same story as you sitting across a table from you, and your first reaction is to judge them for something that they did that you don't agree with, to write them off or to put them in some category that's not a good category in your own brain, then you're wrong.
Even hearing you say that, there's in me that wants to say, you're still welcome here.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's like, but you're also valid. You're also... Yeah,
like, because I was you at different points in my life. Like... I really was.
There's a seat for you at the table. Just come
like
sit.
We want you to keep listening. Like we want you here.
Yeah.
We want you a part of this conversation. but you're wrong.
Aaron, Aaron, what I'm saying is like, I know what you're saying, but it's like, I am absolutely sure there are things I'm wrong about right now.
Sure.
There's just no way that I've got it all right. And that's actually part of the freedom and the grace of like getting older. It's just being like, man, I've already made mistakes and I'm going to probably make some more, but I really do want my life to be tempered with peace and wisdom and gentleness and kindness. And so the best thing we can do is start with listening and first start with empathy for the other.
Right.
That's just the first thing we can do. I mean, one of the things I've been thinking about, like there's been friends and people who have said things to me about Reed because they're angry and out of anger that they're venting and they're having their own process and that's totally okay. But when they say those things actually don't make me feel good. Like there's nothing about this that I'm trying to like slander or hurt or inflict pain or shame. That's not my intention and that's not my goal. And that's not what I desire. Like my desire is for him to find wholeness and healing. And that's my desire for myself. It's my desire for, you know, everybody I interact with. And so it's one of those things where it's like, we all have anger. We all have to process it. We all have judgment. We all have resentments. We all have things we're trying to figure out. And we have to have some sort of parameters of what's right and wrong. Like I understand all that. But at the end of the day, when it comes to people, I just think the posture we need to have first is being willing to receive someone. And that's really hard. And it's really hard when you've been hurt. Mm-hmm. It's really like, I get emotional because like I've been hurt, you know, but our job as adults, I think, is to figure out how to process that stuff mm-hmm. in a healthy way so that we can continue to receive people well.
Before we sat down to record this, I went for a run in your neighborhood
yeah.
and I was listening to an audiobook. And right before I turned it off to come inside, the line was, true wisdom is not communicable. Mm. And I think that that's so true. I think that wisdom can be resonant, but I don't think it's communicable. I think it comes with experience. It comes with life. It comes with going through the thing. And that would also be my encouragement to those listening, especially those who in no way can resonate with the sort of evangelical conversation, you know, the spiritual part of this conversation. That may not be your story and that's fine.
Totally.
All you're doing, Latifa, is telling your experience, but the wisdom that you've gained from it, I think is valid across the whole spectrum of sort of belief and experience. Mm-hmm. But there may be folks who don't understand it, that it doesn't resonate because they just haven't experienced it. They haven't been there. And so,
there are also things like I remember hearing, I've heard a lot of people teach and speak and share and through art, I mean, all different kinds of ways. And there are things that I heard at a different portion of my life that I wasn't ready to receive. And then years later, it felt really applicable.
Mm-hmm.
And I've lived long enough now, 36, to like think, I might not agree with that now. I might not agree with that ever, but I'm gonna think about that.
Yeah.
And it might be applicable later. Mm-hmm. And I think that's been a worthy thing for me to remember too. Like when I hear other people's stories and to remember that. You know, it's like, I'm even thinking about like the end of this song. It's the, I can't go back. It's like the last line on the outro each time. I can't go back, you know? And it's the idea of we can't, like we can't unknow what we know. We can't unexperience what we've experienced. And we have a choice to like start moving forward. And that's why like the last line of the song is, you know, the sun came up, which the world is a reference to the world will continue to move on like we have with the birds and mm-hmm. the interlude track. But like, I'm not going to be the same. And there's a part of that. Sometimes it feels like grief. Like I'm not going to be the same. Am I ruined forever? Am I scarred forever? But there's also, I'm never going to be the same. Like I get to be different. I get to like have this inform and shape me in a way that could be really positive too. Scars leave marks, but they do heal. And they are reminders and they can be really helpful. And I think that's like, for me, I know the song is called Love Gone Bad, but that's how we learn. I don't know another way at this point in my life, you know.
The sun came up just like any other day. As I bye. and I won't be the same.
Thanks to Laura Hooksema, Matt Michelatos, and Alex McReynolds for being a part of this episode. Mutaspira Podcast is hosted by Lativa Alatas, Aaron Hale, and me, Luke Bronner, and is a production of Milieu Media Group. This episode was produced and edited by me and mixed by the fine folks at Resonate Recordings. The artwork was designed by the amazing Annie Herzig, and all music from this and every episode is by Mutaspira. Be sure to support Mutaspira by following her on Spotify and purchasing her albums on iTunes or anywhere digital music is sold. For more information, including tour dates and news, visit Mutaspira.com. Please take a moment to subscribe, rate, and review this show in Apple Podcasts, and be sure to share it with anyone who might need to hear it. Lastly, if you believe in the art of storytelling and want to partner in the production of more shows like this, as well as hear exclusive bonus content from this and other Milieu Media Group podcasts, visit the Patreon link in the show notes for this episode. Thanks so much for listening.